Episode 209.
I was a red line driver. That means every gear is shifted at the red line of the engine, full throttle. So, you know, that's how you know if it's working. The customers don't want the car back unless when they do that, it has 100% of its performance back. But I had a guy who, if I did a tune-up, he would drive up Route 684 at 155 miles an hour, and if it couldn't do 155 in the right amount of time, he'd bring it back and tell me that my tune-up wasn't good enough.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio, and a special interview from an auto care industry professional. On Point. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and welcome to Remarkable Results Radio, the automotive aftermarket's powerful resource of online, on-demand content. Now, it's just like having Netflix for radio. And in this episode 209, I'm with Pierre Rispoe, recorded live at the 14th annual big event in Westchester County, New York. This episode is made possible by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. They are the reason you enjoy these interviews twice per week. When you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Anco, Champion, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and more. They're the parts techs trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com. Hey, thanks to you, episode listens are growing, and I was wondering if you could do me a favor. There are many in the aftermarket that have not heard of the show or even know what podcasting is. You've obviously discovered the value of the insights, trends, and remarkable stories. Hey, would you share? Tell a friend? Well, I asked a while back for you to share, and you delivered. We have many new listeners because of you, and the power of the stories continues to find new friends. So let's do it again. Do a social post. Send the podcast URL, remarkableresults.biz, via email to a friend. Or if you're an insider subscriber, forward your newsletter to appear. And thanks. Hey, and don't forget to download your very own Remarkable Results Radio app for your Android or iOS. Go to your app store, just type in Remarkable Results Radio, and install the free app. You'll have every episode right at your fingertips, and it's your little secret stash of powerful content. Hey, today's show notes on Pierre Rispoe is at remarkableresults.biz/E209. And a big shout out to new Facebook friends Roy Doral, James E. Wilson, Mike Racer, and Kenneth Fay, and to new LinkedIn connections Mike Smith and Demetrius Antonopoulos. Hey, thank you all for your connections. Now meet Pierre Rispoe. We interviewed at the 14th annual big event. Pierre has a storied past, not much he hasn't done. He owned a BMW specialty repair shop for 30 years called Ultimate Cars, and his early days he worked at BMW, VW, and a Ferrari dealership. Now he has a great story to tell you about his days at Ferrari. Not only was he a Ferrari mechanic, he was a redline test driver. Because Ferrari owners demanded the car perform at top condition, he'll tell you the story of how fast his test drives had to go to be sure his tune-up was working properly. Besides stories of his many years in the industry, Pierre tells you what he's doing today. He's not retired, but putting his years of experience to work doing some mobile diagnostics and helping a friend open two shops. Pierre is the VP of the board of TST, Technician Service Training, and he gives you the inside line on this year's 14th annual big event. It has grown beyond their expectations and provides a strong one-day training venue that has participants from 19 states in Canada. Now enjoy the energetic Pierre Rispoe. Here we go. Hey, I'm here at the big event in Tarrytown.
It's Middle Westchester, very close to White Plains. It's a high population area. This is our first event in Tarrytown. We used to be up north of here in Fishkill, but had outgrown that location. And we also wanted to be closer to the population center of New York City, the metro area. So now we can draw more people from Long Island, who traditionally had too long a drive, and from New Jersey. And we've gotten quite a new contingent from Pennsylvania because of this move.
Glad to have you. Pierre Rispoe, you're the vice president of TST.
Yes, I am, yeah.
What an event. I mean, wow, there's 460-plus people.
460-plus attendees. We have 25 vendors. We are represented in the industry by people like Bosch, who make and sell parts, or NAPA, who not only is there as a vendor with a booth, but Tom Rake is there, actually their presenter, their speaker, who's giving one of our seminars. We have Worldpac, which is a wholesale supplier to the industry, and they also brought that one of our speakers is Mark Warren, who's one of their teachers, one of their presenters for their technical training.
A lot of the guests that I interview talk a lot about Worldpac training, and I actually can't wait to get a little, you know, taste of Worldpac training. And the Napa guy out there, he's on fire.
These are all extremely high level, well rated, and well liked teachers and presenters in the industry. And Mark Warren has the unique credentials of having been one of the people who wrote the original OBD2 specifications. He was on the panel that wrote the code.
Great to be listening to a legacy guy like that.
Yeah, right. A lot of experience, but he's also a fantastic storyteller. He's got a million of them. He's very animated.
So, Pierre, as the vice president of TST, this nonprofit organization that brings this big event, the 14th annual, wow, I was here last year, I had a blast, and I'm so happy to be back. Your challenge every year is about continuous improvement and the training.
We have several challenges. The quality of the training that's available to the to us is actually excellent. We have some very highly rated and very educated teachers. The problem has been selecting subject matter that is relevant and current and what attendees are going to want to hear and see, stuff that's today. Too basic and we lose people, too advanced and we lose the people who needed the more basic material. So we try to have some kind of a mix where we have the basic training and the very, very high end, the nosebleed training.
So it's a balance and you learn every year.
Yeah, and we discuss it endlessly and we've sent out polls to our attendees asking them what they want to hear or see, both in subject matter and in presenters. Some of them have seen these people before. At the end, though, we have to make a decision and, you know, we pull the trigger on what we feel is the best mix.
It's a fresh new slate here this year.
Yes, this is a fresh new slate in several ways. Not only is the venue new, we've broken new ground as far as the number of people who've attended. Last year was a record for us as well. We had, I think, a little over 300 last year. This time we have something like almost 460, I think, for high fours.
G. Trulia, your president, and G.'s been on before. We had him on in episode 70, and he was also on with us in episode 105 when we actually recorded last year from the big event. He was saying that you were having to turn people away.
We had to turn people away this time, yes, because, well, there's two reasons for that. Well, number one, this room in its current configuration with tables and chairs, not just chairs, can only fit this number of people, the 460. And we had a lot of people calling at the last minute trying to get in. So the 460 limit is because of the configuration of the room. We really don't want to squeeze people and have them sitting in just chairs all day, but we either have to do that or find an even bigger venue. The other problem is there's an awful lot of behind-the-scenes work that gets done by myself, Jerry, and the unsung hero, Doreen. And Doreen does an awful lot of work behind the scenes. And those things can't be done at the last minute. There's a lot of compilation and cards and the identification tags and lists of everything have to be updated at the end. They can't be done at the end, at, you know, the last day because we're packing everything up and moving.
I just watched it work. The breakfast, the registration, the handing out of the books. It just worked, and that's indicative to how much work you all do beforehand.
We have a lot. Yes, exactly. These things don't happen. It's not magic. And nothing is. You know, working on cars isn't magic either. It takes hard work and dedication and education. In our case, we have a lot of board meetings. We pre-assemble all the technical pieces, sometimes multiple times.
So when do you start preparing?
We start preparing next week for next year's big event.
So how many vendors say, hey, I'm back?
We never have a count early in the year. It's hard to first of all, companies have budgets and they have calendars and schedules that aren't set that far in advance for things like this. As a rule, we have some percentage. It changes every year. But let's say 30 to 50%, we know 6 months in advance that they're coming back. The rest of them, it can be anywhere in between. It's hard to tell.
Have you been able to secure newer vendors each year, or some fresh faces?
Yeah. Well, there's always some attrition. We have to make up for those. There's always companies that get bought out or merged or have budget problems.
But vendors want to join this program you're doing.
Absolutely. But up until the last few years, they didn't really know TST existed, or they just thought it was another little shady organization, and or, you know, whatever the thinking was, it wasn't on their radar.
Okay. So, but it's still.
Now it is. It's more
regional. It's extremely regional, yet
well, originally,
19 states are represented here.
Yeah, but originally the group that seeded this group was not regional. It was national. Originally, we were part of something called STS, Service Technician Society, which was part of the Society of Automotive Engineers, SAE, that makes all the specifications for everything in every automobile and other vehicle, amongst other things. And that was a national organization. But they're a society of engineers, and at some point they decided that the technicians weren't part of their mantra, their goals, and they decided to shut STS down. And since, because of Jerry, really, because of Jerry Trulia, the Northeast region was growing. We were expanding, and we held a board meeting and asked all the board members, local board members, if they wanted to continue as a not-for-profit, to do this on our own outside of Society of Engineers, the SAE, Society of Automotive Engineers. And that's how we started this. That's why this is only the 14th one of these. But we've had big events going back to the early 90s.
What an incredible commitment to training New Englanders, Pennsylvania, Canadians coming down. What are you, 6 hours from Canada, right?
Yes. Well, you know, some of these people fly in. I mean, we've had people, we have a couple of people who drove in from Kentucky.
I'm talking to Bud Houston, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Hey, Bud, what's the best thing about the Guru on the Go van?
Yeah, I think that the best thing about the van and the kind of the mission is it's twofold. One is ultimately to bring brand awareness of the Federal Mogul portfolio. But I think the way that we do that is we bring value to the technician and the shop owner. And how we do that is we bring technical content. We bring some updated material. And once they see that I care about their operation, their reputation, and their qualifications, one, they're built up. But two, they really at that point listen to what I have to say about the brands, and it's built, the relationship is built on a mutual benefit.
So you bring technical stuff and you bring product specific.
Yeah, me personally, I'm super technical background. So anytime I'm doing a lunch and learn or a van visit training session, it's typically 90% technical, 10% product.
Any new Moog products that are getting good reviews?
Yeah, one that's recently released is the Dodge Ram 25 and 3500 complete steering assembly. It's inner and outer tie rod ends and drag link pre-assembled. This is the first aftermarket part that's available in a complete assembly for this application. And the specific applications, late model Dodge Rams, are actually a kind of a high failure part on the chassis parts.
What about the compression-loaded ball joints with pre-installed integral dust boot?
Yeah, the integral dust boot has been a huge hit. Initially, the idea was well, where is the boot? And then once you kind of get around and show people, they're like, well, that is the best idea I've ever seen because I've torn so many boots on installation or I've had a boot that's not seated properly. And they're like, well, that's just not an issue now. And they love it.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the Gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com.
Let's just name drop a little bit. And I did a little writing here. I looked around the room, and there's people I'm sure I missed, but Donnie Cipher.
Yeah, ASA,
chairman.
Yeah,
with me on episode 30 and 33, John Anello, who anyone can
Auto
hear.
Autotech on Wheels, and has done a lot of training, by the way, even for us and for other people as well, and written articles for various magazines. That's
He's going to be teaching at Auto Mechanica this year. He told me he was excited to tell me he was on episode with me. I met him here, and then we did an episode after the big event last year, episode 137.
Very animated. Very smart.
One of my recent podcast interviews, Bill DeBoyer owns a shop, and I was mentioning the big event to him, and he closed his shop yesterday. I believe he brought his people, episode 185, Pete Meyer, of course.
Yeah, Pete Meyer, who's not only been a tremendous supporter of TST, but, you know, Motor Rage is a national magazine, and there's a one hand washes the other aspect to that, of course, in that we supply him articles for the magazine, and we supply a venue for him to do. Every 3 months, we do a webcast, whatever technical subject we choose.
Great guy. He was with me in episode 36, 90, and 59. He's been a very big supporter of the podcast. It was great to see him. Dan Bumhart from ASE with his team is here.
Yeah.
He was with me in episode 122. And ASE, everything you wanted to know, but you didn't know who to ask.
Yes, exactly. And ASE has also been great supporters of ours. And in fact, you know, it's not that with ASE, they have to guard their questions and their mechanism for making questions, so it's fair and relevant. But there was a seminar once where they allowed us to make up ASE dummy questions, not the real ones. Couldn't cheat for the test. But it was a class really to show what the thinking. This wasn't a way to learn ASE questions or answers. It was a way to understand what the thinking was behind it.
I was involved in one of those for the parts specialist once, and it just blew my mind as to what it takes. And we actually discussed that in this episode with Dan. It was episode 122. And of course, G. Trulia.
Yeah, right, who's got a lot of credentials in the business, doesn't really promote, I mean, he promotes his training business, but he doesn't promote all the things he does for the industry that he really doesn't talk about. He's been involved also on those OBD panels that made that original spec. Actually, he was the got me into this, what is now TST, because he asked me if I wanted to be involved with STS originally, and he was already on the national board. So he was involved, and that's all time spent for no money. This is true charity, you know, donating your time for the industry. He does a lot of work with other trainers. He helps them either improve their credentials or improve the venues that they have to teach at. And he's been very active in the industry. And he helps, you know, he's still active in the industry. He's got a shop, and he still repairs cars.
So we did an episode, G and myself, in episode 70. And then, of course, I came here and we did the big event last year. There were some technicians and G came on at the end. And that was in an episode 105. Glad to be here. Now, the age of our technicians that are in the room. Now, you've had a chance to look it over. Tell me what you see.
This year is very encouraging. We've commented in years past that we had the technician age in the room was aging and we weren't getting enough new technicians, younger technicians. This year and last year too, we see more younger technicians. We even have students. So we're really starting to run the gamut, which is what we want. We want to see the mix of student to people like me who are retirement age, but still in the business.
What do you mean retirement age?
Whatever that means.
You're kicking me here. What do you mean?
Yeah.
You know, you've been a Bosch trainer, of course, with TST. You're a Beamer tech. You owned your own BMW
30,
shop.
30 years. Ultimate Cars for the ultimate driving machine.
Clever name, by the way. Congratulations on that. Rumor has it you've got 50 years in the business. You don't look
Correct.
A day over 49.
Yeah, I wish. 50 years in the business, yes. I started when I was 16, and you can do the math.
You worked at BMW dealerships, Ferrari.
I worked at a Ferrari dealership.
Tell me about that.
That was unique. That was the oldest original Ferrari dealer in the country, called Cinetti Motors. It was opened by a man named Luigi Cinetti, who was a co-driver with Enzo Ferrari in the 30s for Alfa. They were teammates, and he was offered the importership. So I didn't really work for him because he had retired, but I met him, but his son was running the business. Very interesting, crazy, but interesting.
Were you a tech on car?
I was a tech, I was a line tech. We didn't call ourselves tech spec then. I was a mechanic.
Line mechanic, okay.
And this was in the 70s.
How many Ferraris would you see in a week that needed to have some TLC?
Very few, because each car required a tremendous amount of time. It was not uncommon to spend one or more days on a single car.
Why?
Because everything is labor intensive. These cars usually didn't come in just for an oil change. First of all, the clientele who bought these vehicles tended to treat them like the race cars they are. Well, race cars require an extreme level of repair and maintenance.
Was this in New York?
This was in Greenwich, Connecticut.
In Greenwich, Connecticut, okay. And where are the places in Greenwich, Connecticut, that that car could be opened up?
Legally, none. We did have Route 95 right next to us, and we had Route 287 because it was almost in Portchester. It was almost on the New York line. So we had Route 287 available. But, you know, you have to be careful because that car can go over the speed limit in first gear or second.
So you've driven them, obviously.
Oh, yes. Test drives were the fun part of it.
Tell me about your most favorite test drive.
Back then, I was a red line driver. That means every gear is shifted at the red line of the engine, full throttle. So, you know, that's how you know if it's working. The customers don't want the car back unless when they do that, it has 100% of its performance back. I've had people who run up 684 doing, actually, that was a BMW story. But I had a guy who, if I did a tune-up, he would drive up Route 684 at 155 miles an hour. And if it couldn't do 155 in the right amount of time, he'd bring it back and tell me that my tune-up wasn't good enough. So it's a different criteria from most people.
How do you deal with that?
Well, I wasn't going to go 155. So I just had to, you know, tune it the best I could and go based on whatever data I could test to see where it was a little off. These are matters of degree. You know, it's almost perfect.
Little mini slices of change.
Yes, mini slices of change. Very, very small corrections.
How much fun was that? And then that got you into what? When did you fall in love with working on BMW?
Actually, before Ferrari. I had worked at a BMW dealer in the early 70s before Ferrari. And I really only left because they didn't want to pay me as much money as I wanted, of course. And I had worked for another shop, a guy who owned a fleet of taxi cabs and had a general repair shop. Didn't have enough money to really start a whole shop, so I sublet part of a shop and it wasn't working out. So that's when I got the offer to go to Ferrari. By the time I was done with Ferrari, I was able to afford to start a shop.
Were you in your 20s, 30s?
I was in my 20s. I was in my 20s.
I love these stories. This is great. So after Ferrari, how'd you get to VW?
Well, I was bored. So I retired. I closed my shop. I had stopped. I needed a sabbatical. I had worked from the age of 14 to the age of 58 without a break and with really very, very few even vacations. And so I just, the business needed to be reinvented. I was tired of what I was doing. It was, you know, it was time. 30 years in one location is a long time. And I quit and I bought a backhoe and built a dream barn, a workshop, Santa's workshop, man cave. And when I was done with all of that, I was bored. So I really started just looking for something to do that was going to be easy. And I answered an ad for a service writer at this dealer, but I sent them my resume. And they kind of went, oh, wait a minute. We don't really want you to be a service writer. Our shop is broken. We need somebody to fix our shop. We need a shop foreman. So that's how that happened. So I was there. I fixed their shop.
No doubt, looking at your resume, I would have seen that too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what happened. But they were like 38th out of 40 dealers in the region when I started. And that's all rated in CSIs, Consumer Satisfaction Index, those surveys everybody gets. And within, I think, 3 months, we were number three. And within 6 months, we were number one. And the whole rest of the time, we were number one. So we did great. But I worked myself out of a job is what happened. I made us number one, and then they didn't want me anymore.
And then did you have fun turning it around?
Oh, yeah. It was great.
How long were you there?
It was like 2 years.
And then all of a sudden, hey, thanks for putting us on the straight and narrow.
Yeah, yeah. And don't let the door hit you on the way out. They actually made a mistake because they did not do that in an orderly way. And when they didn't prepare anybody, and because of that they had a near riot when they told the crew that they had kicked me out, and within about 5 or 6 months they lost almost everybody. I think there were only 2 or 3 people left.
You told me a really funny story about your house and the neighbors that owned BMWs, and they were a little concerned about, was it the man cave you were building?
Yeah, the man cave. Yeah, they were concerned that I would turn it into a commercial enterprise, and they didn't want a commercial enterprise in a residential area. So every one of them, or most of them, came over to me while I was building it and asked something to the effect of, you're not going to work on cars here commercially, are you? And I said, no, my intention was to do this for myself. But human nature being what it is, little by little, almost every one of them came to me and asked for help on a car.
Ah, there's a BMW car. I own one. Ooh.
Yeah, and we have an expert across the street.
Yeah, I know. Maybe Pierre can help me someday.
I've helped them all over the last seven, eight years.
So Ultimate Cars, your BMW company, how long did you own it?
30 years.
And then you got bored, you built your man cave, then you went to the VW dealership.
Yeah, I went to the, well, that was really just something to do.
Hard to repair BMWs?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think there's a shoe that fits everyone. And so for me, it seems intuitive. And there's obviously something warped there, a French guy working on a German car. But it fits, it works for me. And other people find them totally infuriating. You know, I don't like the Volkswagen Audi line nearly as much as I like BMW, but there are other people who just love them. There's a philosophy that goes into the design of these products. And if your brain works in line with that philosophy, you're going to have a lot easier time than if there's a conflict.
Are they the ultimate driving machine?
I think so. I love them. And they're also very safe. They don't push this very much. But they've been really rugged in crashes. One saved my wife's life years ago, absolutely. You know, of course, it was my favorite car that I had just spiffed up perfectly, but what are you going to do? But it saved her life. And so that's something they don't really push as much as some other manufacturers, but they're very crash safety. And the company is rabidly fanatical about crash safety designs.
So, Pierre, what are you doing now? I mean, are you totally retired?
Actually, I can't. It's not possible for me to really
retire. So there is life after partial retirement.
Correct. So besides TST, even though I have not pursued it, I have a little bit of a mobile diagnostics business. So I have some shops that call me up when they're in trouble.
Do they call you out for BMW only?
No, that can be anything. It's all diagnostics. It's not, you know, simple problems. It's usually something that's had a lot of parts thrown at it and they're tearing their hair out and they can't figure it out.
Let's call Super Pierre.
Yeah, that's it. The bottom line is, so I do that. I did last year for a while work for Adam Varney at his shop because he had a customer who was a collector who had passed away, and he had a large collection of exotic cars. And Adam knew that I had worked on these Ferraris and other exotics back in the day. You know, he called me and asked me to help on that. So I did a lot of work on those vehicles. They were what I call sitting damage, vehicles that sit too long in storage without properly being prepared, have all kinds of problems. So we brought a lot of those cars back so they could be auctioned off. One by one. You know, some of them were very expensive. I mean, I didn't really work on the Mercedes too much, but there was a Mercedes 300 SL that went for practically $1 million. The Ferrari Daytona was not the best example out there, but I think it went for 800 or so. But it would have been worth more. I think it was only 750, actually. But it would have been worth more if it had been a real flawless example.
When you're working on a car that's worth $1 million or you're hanging around that group, are you in awe of that?
There's a little more trepidation in my case. I mean, I worked on these vehicles when they were new, when they were only worth $20,000 or $30,000, you know, and which was a lot of money in the 70s, by the way. You know, you have to be careful. First of all, I'm careful around anything I work on, so that's not really different. There's a different level of care. You know, you can't drive – those vehicles have to be driven hard and yet not hard. It's a fine line. You can't be crazy.
What do you mean not hard?
You work them up to speed slowly. You warm them up for 45 minutes before you drive them. We may run up a road, only on real highways, whatever, with a lead and a chase car, somebody to keep. And if there's any traffic, you don't do it. You know, things like that. It becomes more involved. And the work itself is actually not as difficult as a modern car in some ways. There's a lot less technology. There's very little technology by today's standards, but it's very mechanical, and parts are not always available. So sometimes you get into manufacturing things. It becomes a lot more of a craft.
You're actually going to go out and get something machined?
Oh, yeah, we make stuff. You have to.
But you can't go to Italy and get stuff?
They won't make it anymore. They're past that. Company's been bought and sold, and that stuff's not available. And those cars were handmade anyway. So they were making molds and casting X number of pieces before they broke up the mold and made another mold for something else. And the bodies were hand-pounded over wooden form, so no two are alike. And I don't do body work, but the body guys that have to deal with those cars are unbelievable artists.
What else you doing?
I have a guy who used to be an apprentice of mine who's here today, actually, at the big event. But he's opening a couple of shops, one in Pittsfield, Mass., and one in Brookfield, Connecticut. And I'm helping him get that started. And, you know, I get calls for other things. And I haven't really done teaching lately, but I've done that too.
You were a Bosch trainer, right?
I was a Bosch trainer. That was a contract deal. So I wasn't like a Bosch employee training full time. It was a program they ran. And I had to fly around the country to provide training wherever they had booked it.
So Monday through Friday, what do you put in, 3 days a week on an average?
Oh, no, I'm working almost every day.
How exciting to have, if you will, grown into such a fun, different, exciting level of your career.
It's actually much less stressful than owning my own business. Some ways more satisfying, some ways less satisfying. I miss the rapport with my regular customers. And I felt a tremendous loyalty to them. I mean, I really should have closed my doors 2 years earlier, but I didn't want to abandon the good guys. I really wanted to run away from the bad ones.
Yeah, firing customers, right?
Firing customers, that's correct. You know, it's a two-way street, and respect has to go both ways. And if I'm behaving like a professional, which I always attempt to do, hopefully I'm always successful, then I expect to be treated as a professional. So that goes both ways.
A few of my loyal fans have reached out and said, let's just do some interviews about where people's evolution of their job has gotten them. And, you know, so many people that listen to the podcast say, you know, I'm a tech and I don't know what I'm ever going to be. I am a shop owner. I never know what I'm going to be. And I've interviewed some people that have gone from tech to teaching to working for other
some company, right?
Yeah, and what I find so interesting is, you know, did you ever think back in the early days of BMW that you would be doing the things you're doing today?
No, I really probably wasn't very smart about it back then. I wasn't planning long-term what I wanted to do. Friends of mine or family would ask me, well, how long are you going to do this? You know, because I had a business degree and I had other credentials I could have used in other areas. And I said, until I stop having fun. And basically, I stopped having fun. So that's when I closed.
Are you having fun
now? I'm having fun now.
So you had to go out and find some new fun.
Yeah, I had. And I like a challenge. So one of the things that makes somebody want to diagnose things as opposed to just, you know, changing parts or whatever is kind of a natural curiosity. If I was asked by somebody young what to do, I would say, be curious. Be a kid. Ask why a lot. Why does that do that? Why is that happening? How does that work? If you're not curious and you're not asking why, you'll never know the answer. Also, nobody knows everything. God knows everything, but we don't. So the bottom line is, in any situation, you can always learn more, and you're always going to be stymied by something. And strength in today's world is that we have electronic media that allow us to network and reach out. You know, we have YouTube and Google and things like that, but I'm talking about more personal things. One of the strengths of the big event, and of TST actually, is that we meet people at these events and we get each other's phone numbers and contact information. And when we have a problem, we have people to reach out to instead of being lost. So that's actually a strength of this type of organization. It's also a strength of other things. IATN, Scott Brown is here today. That's one of the reasons IATN grew. That grew up out of a CompuServe chat for techs, I think it was called. I was a member of that a long time ago. But that grew out of that. It was an effort by people who were looking to the future to network.
What a beautiful conclusion to our discussion. And I love where you actually took it. I was going to ask you, what advice would you give to young people?
Never stop learning. You know, when you, it's a different field, but when somebody gets a pilot's license, the classic line that the examiner gives the new pilot, when the person passes the flight test, they hand them a temporary license and they say, this is your license to learn. And so not go get them, boy, you know what you're doing. This is your license to learn. And I think that is a wonderful philosophy for our whole world, certainly the automotive business, that once you, whatever credentials you have, whatever, however far you've gone, however much education you've gotten, there's always more to learn. And really what you've just done is taken the baby steps when you start, when you get that diploma or whatever.
So you have to be so proud of what is sitting out in the ballroom going through that education.
I don't know if pride is it. I'm relieved, but I'm very happy.
I actually went out and I met an awful lot of young people coming up from college to attend here.
Yes, and that's one of the things that's begun only the last couple of years. This really didn't happen, five, 8 years ago. As we discussed earlier, it's wonderful to see them coming to something like this because, well, for one thing, it opens their eyes to the continuing education nature of this, but also it gives them a chance to network and it makes them feel part of something bigger than just whatever shop they're going to end up in. Makes them feel like they're part of the community.
Man, I have so enjoyed this. Thank you for all the TST information and thank you for the great stories.
You're quite welcome. Well, my wife says that my brain is an encyclopedia of useless information.
No.
But of course, it's only useless if you don't use it.
Thank you so much, Pierre Rispo, for being in the interview today, man.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, man. Hey, Aftermarketers, thanks for joining. For an in-depth episode experience, don't miss the show notes for this episode with Pierre Rispo, the VP of the Board of Technician Service Training. Find them exclusively on the show's episodes page at remarkableresults.biz/E209. Hey, it was great to hear the stories from one of our industry's legacy shop owners, trainer, and technician. Don't forget to pay it forward to an industry peer, send the episode link, and let's get a new wave of podcast listeners registered and downloading the podcast app. And don't keep it a secret. Just think, the more your friends listen, the more you can share your thoughts about every show and build your own insider podcast network. Hey, by the way, it's always great to hear from you. Send me an email, carm@remarkableresults.biz, that's B-I-Z, or head over to the contact page on the website. Thanking you always for your continued support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.